Welcome to How to Cover an Election, where four broadcast journalism students tackle an election campaign for the first time.
Each week we're talking to experts in their fields as we look at all the key themes for the media in the build-up to the polls.
We'll also talk you through our experiences of election coverage as the contest heats up.
Hello and welcome to another episode of How to Cover an Election. Tonight is the BBC's seven-way debate, and by the time you're listening to this, we'll be on our third day of production with the BBC as the events unfold. In anticipation of tonight's episode, which is packed out with debate material, let's go back a couple of weeks first. We were down at ITV at their leaders' debate with Adrian Masters, and here's what he said after he chaired the five-way debate.
Adrian Masters, after the ITV debates.
I mean, it's what, 12 minutes since it finished or something. I've even got sandwiches in my hand.
I know, we're being very cruel in interviewing you while you're eating. So how do you feel that went, that first of all?
It felt great to me. I felt really enjoyable, full of lots of energy. It was, they were argumentative, but they didn't descend into unpleasantness, which could have happened. But I really won't be able to tell until I've watched it back and I've seen what people have said on Twitter and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it felt good in there, but I'll be very interested to see what the reaction is.
What's it like during the ad breaks? Are people still at each other's throats? Is there a rule of, like, no talking?
No. They're not at each other's throats. I mean, sometimes there is a bit of a come down where they've just been having a go at each other. And it's usually just a chance for everyone to take a couple of breaths. We all swig our water and get on to, you know, think about the next thing. But no, you know, I mean, they made their points forcefully, but they didn't descend into nastiness at any stage, and particularly in the breaks, it was fine. I have had some awkward breaks in other times, but not tonight.
Can you talk us through what's being said into your ear while this is all going on?
Everything. There is as you carry on with training, you'll hear all these different terms, but there are different types of talkback you get. The best one, but is the most difficult, is what they call open or omni, and that's what I had. And that's, you can hear everything in the gallery, so you can hear the director, including whatever she's saying to the producer and what she's saying to the camera people. You can hear the producer as well, who will sometimes pick up on things, and he told me a few times I needed to go a bit more to one of the other parties because I hadn't given them enough time, that kind of thing. And yes, you can hear all the sort of noise that's going on. Most important thing you're listening out for is the person that is counting down in your ear, because if you don't shut up, then you don't shut up, you know, it causes all manner of problems. So yeah, lots.
There may be a few people who question the usefulness of debates like this on TV. Where do you stand on that? Why do you think these are important for democracy?
I know why people question them, because particularly at a UK level, the people say they suck a lot of energy out of the debate. The parties spend a long time preparing for them, and instead of actually going out on the doorsteps and things like that. I think that particularly in an election like this in the winter, when people aren't really on the doorsteps in the way they are, you know, that's it's a good public service as well as quite exciting to do, because actually, for a lot of people, that will be their only contact with with a political party and hearing what the political parties stand for. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're valuable. I would say that because I'm, and also, you know, I mean, let's not pretend it. I enjoy it. It's good fun. I enjoy watching them. I enjoy doing them.
Going back into the nitty gritty again, what percentage of your notes do you think you ended up using? Because I remember you saying, we were chatting to you before the debate, you said you have to massively, basically over prepare so you're ready for anything.
I wouldn't like to put a percentage on there. Less than a quarter, probably even a fifth, I suspect. The things I had prepared there, I had facts and figures on climate change, on the amount of money the EU spends in Wales and the amount of money that Wales gets back from the EU. I had the various targets. I didn't need any of that. I also gave myself a load of potential challenges. Some of them I used, but I always over-prepare. It's always better to be over-prepared than not. But mostly, you know, my job is also to challenge, but it's also just to make sure the others get a chance to have a go. So, yeah, maybe a fifth of it all, I suppose I'd use. But none of it's wasted. I'll use it in other programmes, and it's always good information to have.
Can I also ask you just to talk us through the rehearsal? Because we gathered earlier that reporters in the newsroom will play different
That's
characters.
That's exactly it, yeah. Yeah, different reporters took on the different roles. They learnt the policies and learnt some of the sound bites. But actually, more importantly, what we got from the rehearsal, because, I mean, the whole point of the rehearsal is to find out what things could go wrong, to give us some idea, because, the reporters can be more badly behaved than the politicians, because that's what I need to know. If they break the rules by mentioning their constituencies too much or saying something libelous or or I don't know, or wandering off from behind their lectern, that sort of thing. So yeah, that's the sort of thing we find out from the rehearsals. But it's quite good fun. You know, sometimes we just laugh at each other.
I think tonight you've came in with some lovely one-liners and things like that. As a presenter or a facilitator of a debate, how important is it for you to sort of put your own stamp on it but still remain kind of neutral, if you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not about me, it's about them. But at the same time, my job is to... So there was a point when Jane Dodds wanted somebody else to ask a question, and I said, I'll decide the order of that. You know, that happens quite a lot because they are focusing their fire on those. And, yeah, you know, you have a bit of personality that leaks into it. It's inevitable. But, you know, I mean, really my job is there to make sure that they all get... not equality of time particularly, but equality of opportunity and get challenged when need be.
When we were backstage, we were with all the spin teams then behind each of the candidates or each of the panellists. How conscious are you of what the candidates or the panellists are saying is spun, and how do you counteract that?
All that research that I did really getting ready, because it's you know, I mean, take the Labour 1.2 trillion figure. It was important to put it to Labour because it's around, but it's also important to make sure that the Conservatives were challenged on it. Now, actually, in that case, the others, the panelists did the challenging. I didn't feel the need to do that, but I was ready to do that. So yeah, you're always aware that actually what is the reality behind that. In my research, I found some of the most helpful things were things like the Senedd research site and the Commons Library Full Fact. They're really helpful websites actually to establish as close to a fact as you can, and then be able to put it to people and say, well, what do you say to that?
Bit of a basic question. If you could summarise that in three words, what would it be?
Exhausting, exciting, exhilarating.
The three E's, I like that. Yeah. Good.
I should go into advertising.
So I'll come to you first, Gareth, for a bit of immediate reaction. What do you think of what Adrian did?
His point about how some people especially this time of year, only interact with the parties and the campaign trail through these debates was quite interesting, because it's a winter debate for the first time in a long time. You know, you talk about people, you know, bad weather's putting canvassers off. I've been speaking to people across Cardiff's constituencies who are saying, compared to other debates, they haven't been having their doors knocked as regularly. So I think that was a really strong point from Adrian made. Saying that maybe these debates are more important than they have been previously, because they are allowing people who are otherwise not connecting with the parties to have that connection.
I even think in terms of just the election itself, as in when we actually have the voting, the polling day, having venues ready for people to get to and be able to vote. You know, not everybody's going to have a postal vote. You know, the elder generation have to get out maybe in the wet, the cold, the rain, etc. So that is a good point. And exactly as you say, you know, this interaction might be the only time they see these figures.
Yeah, it's the first winter election, isn't it, since something like 1923. So it's the first time we'll see debates having a real centre stage, because we've only had debates since 2010 and they've all been normal summer elections when there's also plenty of candidates.
But do you think maybe that 2010 was like a pinnacle of debates, and maybe the relevance is sort of fading as time has gone on?
I think there are big differences now, which is 2010 you had two major parties and the Lib Dems were still this. So the Lib Dems went in with, what, 58 seats in 2010. And then obviously Clegg got this big bump from the debates and then ended up losing two seats. So almost 2010 showed us that debates weren't as crucial as we maybe thought they might be. Especially because we looked over at America having debates since the 60s and kind of thought, when are we going to finally do this? And then they finally happened and we thought it didn't actually make that much difference to the result.
What do you think, Chloe? Do you think we're actually going to have an impact on the actual result maybe of what might happen at the election?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm kind of I can see both sides of it in terms of the fact that when you have, you know, five parties on a debate, I don't know if you learn a lot from that. It's kind of like who can take the best shots at each other, who can get the good one-liners in, who can put down all the other parties. But then on the other side, because Adrian Masters there was talking about the impact that he's going to look at on social media of how well it's gone. Because if people aren't seeing canvassers out and about, the debates that are going on, they do generate content that parties will use on social media and people's reactions to them on social media and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember speaking to one of the spin team at one party, and I won't say which party it was, But they, I remember them being very clear that the content of the debate doesn't really matter. As long as they can get one or two clips of their candidate saying something good that they can then spread on social media, and a couple of clips of the opposition saying something bad, that's a good night for them. And if he has a nightmare for the rest of the debate, it doesn't really matter.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is, but do you think maybe that parties now treat these debates as like a forum to get out on social media with these like soundbitey type of clips, a PR thing? So, you know, the debate itself, like you said, is a bit irrelevant, really. You know, if they have a good day, though, they'll use it. But if they have a bad day, oh, so be it, we'll forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that it's a, you know, formal televised debate, it also gives the clips that they put out there a bit of credibility, I think, as well. So people viewing this clip of the politician saying, you know, saying the party line or something like that, may be viewed as more credible on social media by the voters.
I think the it seems to me it's becoming more, slightly more US presidential in style. However, debates have been something that have had a long history in British politics through local hustings. And I think now these regional debates, like this Welsh debate, sit somewhere between that local hustings on a constituency level, like Nick Webb was talking about a few weeks ago with us, and the national debates. But I think it's also important to put into perspective that a debate on ITV Wales with the Welsh political leaders probably won't have an audience share in Wales like a national one will, like tonight's.
No.
And I think on the night it was very interesting when Ev, you spoke to Liz Saville-Roberts,
yeah,
say, asking a question about how, you know, why is it important that Plaid Cymru appear on national, yeah, BBC programming when they're only standing in Wales.
Yeah, you are right, Gareth, about what Liz Saville-Roberts said. And I sort of mentioned it on earlier pods where, you know, you'd think that the Welsh debate would be a massive night for Plaid Cymru. But when the week before she was on Question Time in Brighton, and I was really sceptical of that. I didn't see the need for it, you know, because obviously Brighton is nowhere near Wales, and obviously they won't be able to vote for a Plaid Cymru representative. But Liz Saville-Roberts told us that was possibly more influential than the ITV one because it's got a wider reach. It's just something you don't really think of. It's clever tactics, really, when you think about it, but you just don't think about it.
Well, you have quite a lot of interest in US politics. I just made that point about how I think they're becoming more US or American-like in terms of their style. Do you see a comparison between the British debates and the US debates?
I mean, I do and I don't, and I think there's a couple of crucial differences that makes their debates better than ours. The first being that in the primary debates, which is basically the candidates for one party fighting to be the nominee for president, the debates are at least 3 hours long, and they're really substantive issues. So there'll be 3 hours of TV, 3 or 4 hours sometimes, which sounds like a really long time for someone to pay attention, but you do really get into the issues. And they'll go through one by one. They'll say, your healthcare plan, let's hear exactly what it is and how you're going to pay for it, etc. Then in the presidential debates, traditionally, it was at least an hour, maybe 2 hours long, and there were no ad breaks. And so you just go straight through one-on-one, and it's like a real, it does expose people's weaknesses. I think in recent years it's got worse because the audience has started to get involved. And a point I was going to make was what you guys think about an audience at a debate, because I always find that debates are better when there's no audience, because if you have an audience, you can get Corbyn and Johnson, in this case, just playing up to get a laugh or to get a soundbite that gets applause. And it doesn't seem to be as effective to me.
Yeah, I think audiences, you see it not just in election cycles, but also on programming like BBC's Question Time. You see audiences are there to support a panelist, as opposed to actually be there to listen to all of them. So any politician will say anything, and there'll be a round of applause or a round of boos. And I think it cheapens it slightly, to be honest.
And also, I feel like the difference that I've noticed this time round is that the audience will laugh. I think that was a big shocking thing that people took away from the Corbyn and Johnson head-to-head on ITV, was that the debate wasn't exactly show-stopping, but the audience interaction and the audience laughing at the fact that Boris Johnson was saying he was trustworthy and Jeremy Corbyn's position on Brexit and like laughing at them.
Do they just laugh for the sake of laughing, or do they just clap?
It was interesting that they laughed. So that, yeah, in that way, the audience was useful. But audience reactions affect how you think. So It's the same as like a sitcom. If you watch, there's one episode of Only Fools and Horses that was recorded without a laughter track, and it's really weird to watch, and it's not as funny. And I don't know what it is, but it's just other people laughing makes you laugh. And in the same way, other people applauding will make you feel like you should applaud as well, and it'll make you feel like that's a good point. Whereas if you watch these old American presidential debates, and they make what is a really interesting point, and then there's silence. It gives you time to actually digest what they're saying and then hear the response from the opponent.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how it pans out tonight, because obviously you've got a studio audience, you've got seven panelists all vying for the attention of the TV audience and the audience at the event. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes tonight.
Yeah, and also we'll talk a little bit later on, because obviously on Tuesday we had the Andrew Neil interviews, or the latest Andrew Neil interview with Jeremy Corbyn, and I think the Boris Johnson one's coming up next week. So that's an alternative where there's no audience and there's no audience questions. So I think we'll talk about that later in the episode.
You're listening to How to Cover an Election. You can keep up with our coverage on Twitter and Instagram at HowToElection.
And now for a change in debate style. Myself and Chloe were at the Ask for Leader debate with Adam Price for Leader of Plaid Cymru, and was hosted by Bethan Rhys-Roberts. This debate was a question and answer with the audience. We caught up with Bethan Rhys-Roberts after the debate to see what she had to say.
Bethan, in terms of this type of debate, it's a bit of you and a bit of the audience. How difficult is that to manage?
They're not easy. They look easy, and the task is to make them look as easy as possible. But my gosh, I get very nervous before them, I've got to say, because you never know which direction things are going to go. You've got an audience, I mean, pretty small tonight, to be honest, under 50. We sometimes have 100, 150. And you have maybe a panel. Tonight we had one person. So you've got to make it good telly. You've got to make it informative. You've got to make it understandable. You've got to make it engaging. And it's all down to you, but it's not about you. So it's quite a difficult job to chair it. Some go well, some don't go so well. And a lot of it depends on the energy levels of the audience, how engaged they are. You might get the odd audience member who is absolutely fuming. And, you know, you've got to control that person from quite a distance sometimes. So, they're quite a challenge, but they're great fun.
Well, I was just going to say, we had an example tonight of a gentleman who was quite forceful and was quite, cut his point across. Do you find that hard to sort of interject and stop him? Do you get told to stop him, or what
sort of... There are constant voices in your ear, but they you sort of develop a relationship with the voices in your ear. They trust you, and then, you know, they won't interject because they know it's very important that you hear that person. Now, if you've got three or four voices in your ear and somebody's getting very cross and maybe they swear or they say something that is unacceptable, you've got to hear that. So it's a delicate balance between having support in your ear, but also not too much so that you actually miss a word that you need to maybe instantly apologise about. So suddenly, when you think, right, this contributor could be problematic, you've got to fine-tune your antennae, listen to every single word, make a judgment. You know, do I need to apologise here? Do I need to shut him up? Because obviously, you know, you want everybody to have their time to speak. You can't just be too heavy-handed. So you've got to take it on a case-by-case basis, really. But it's not easy. But they will step in. If you've missed something, then, you know, the editor will shout, apologise about that, or, you know, you missed that, or he said this, or, you know, you just have got to have your wits about you.
How do you strike the balance between deciding to have three pre-decided questions and then with the audience? How does that process work?
Well, what we do is we invite the audience members and then to contribute questions over a period of about a month, really. We start plugging the programme. So the questions start coming in. Then we have researchers who block them and we see which are the big themes emerging. Yeah. So, for example, tonight, the big themes emerging were Brexit, independence, and the fact that Plaid Cymru had done pacts. So when you've got a lot of questions about those three things, you know you've got to have, those are your three questions. Yeah. I mean, there were some others, but maybe just one or two. And you've just got to make a judgment. There might be fantastic questions about other subjects. But actually you could think, well, this is what the most of our viewers want to talk about. So we knew last week that these were the emerging themes. And then we fine-tune it then down to, well, which question is nice and crisp and simple and gets to the nub of the issue? And then you sort of pick questioners from various types of background. You're not going to have... I mean, we had supporters of each party there tonight. So we make sure that we haven't got three questions from three Plaid Cymru supporters. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have to ask what people's backgrounds are, whether they voted Remain or Leave. So then you work it out, and it's quite a process. The researchers go through it with the editor, myself, and we make sure then on our grid that each question, all together, we've got a good reflection of the whole spectrum.
For you personally, we spoke with Adrian Masters at the weekend, how much prep and planning he does for his debates. How much prep and planning do you put in? And he put on, he said roughly about 20% of his notes were used. Is it the same type of thing for you, or is it less?
Absolutely. You have to prepare. I don't like winging it anyway. And sometimes, of course, you have to. You're thrown into something. But I don't like winging it. I like to be over-prepared, if anything. And yeah, same as Adrian, I would say. You know, when I think of how much reading and studying and pages of notes I've done, and the programme's over, and I think, God, I didn't use any of that. You know, because the other thing is, you've got to respond to what's being said at the time. But it's great to know that, well, if he goes down that avenue, I've got that stat. If he goes down there, I can say this. But it is a chess game. It is a mighty chess game, and you've got to be totally prepared. But yeah, the prep is absolutely crucial. And thank goodness to all the researchers out there in terms of, you know, different think tanks and so forth, and the BBC work that's done. Then you can turn to lots of sources and the polls and everything and just garner it all and hope some of it sticks. And sometimes it doesn't. You know, you might have a blank and you think, oh, I should have said that. But you've got to move on. You've got to move on and be ready for the next occasion.
So just out of the heat of a battle, if you could describe that experience in three words, what would it be?
Scary, exciting, and fulfilling. Yeah.
How effective do you think the Ask the Leader debates are compared to perhaps having a debate with like members of all the parties there? How does it differ? And do you think it's more effective?
Really good question. Really good question. I mean, it's, they're different. I know the politicians, you know, they feel that both of them are difficult, actually, because if you're on your own, it's pretty scary, and you know you've got some supporters out there, some who really don't like you out there, and you've got to bat them all off. The debate, sometimes you get more heat than light. You know, you can't say after any of these programmes, really, that you get right, drill down into anything massively new, because that needs to be in a dark room, one-to-one, with one camera, and you're just grilling somebody forensically. These, you can't really be forensic in these. These are about, you know, keeping the audience energy levels up, but also trying to get some answers. And I think we did, we got some answers tonight.
With debates in general, do you still think they hold a place in society with social media and things like that on the telly during an election campaign, maybe?
I do, yeah. I think, you know, for the audience and hopefully for viewers and listeners and people watching online or following on Twitter, to see them being put under pressure and not knowing what question is coming. You know, we plan these programmes in terms of, right, we're going to have that question, then that. But in between the questions, people can put their hand up and ask absolutely everything, anything they like. So to see a politician face the electorate like that, I think, you know, call me old-fashioned, but I think it's good telly.
Beth Ann Rhys-Roberts, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Diolch.
So, Will, I know you're really critical of the audience's role in these type of debates.
Yeah, I shouldn't be, because I know that we might have a really good debate in Cardiff tonight. But when Beth Ann Rhys-Roberts said that the success of the debate depends a lot on the audience and the questions they ask, it did kind of bring into my mind what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Vox Pops, which was that why should we assume that the person asking that question represents a certain group? So either you might be a Brexiteer and see another Brexiteer asking a question and think he doesn't represent who I am, or vice versa, you might be a Remainer and see someone saying revoke Article 15 and you might think, well, I don't really want to revoke, I just want to kind of have another referendum, whatever. The point is, it's similar to Vox Pops in that these few selected people asking questions, why should they represent entire separate, disparate movements?
Yeah, but do you think then maybe having the audience their background and say, like, having Beth Ann Rhys or Adrian ask the question what the audience might have asked and then have them invite them to interject as we went along, do you think that might be a better type of style, or what do you think about that?
It is better, and I think she did a great job at trying to follow up, but I just think more can be achieved, and I'll reiterate this point later, more can be achieved by a one-on-one interview with a politician.
Yeah. Well, that's quite funny, actually, Will, because I didn't like that style of debate. I didn't think it was long enough for starters. I think 30 minutes is too short. And I think secondly as well, as you sort of mentioned with your point there, is that people can come in and sort of delay the process, not inadvertently, you know, not deliberately, but accidentally delay the process by repeating points, etc. So for me, it just didn't work
But I know, Chloe, you've got a different opinion to me.
Yeah, I thought that worked really well compared to the five-way debate with Adrian Masters, just because you had, okay, yes, the audience, like, you know, we were sitting in the audience. I can see the downsides of having the audience ask questions and being able to interject and things like that. But also the fact that then Bethan Rees-Roberts was able to grill him specifically on certain points about the whole idea of the pacts, that I found that really interesting. And I think you got a lot more out of it, personally, than the having five leaders trying to take shots at each other, where you actually had Adam Price. Okay, he may have not really directly answered some of the questions on pacts and stuff like that, but I think that giving him a grilling, you could see what subjects he was weak on and which ones he was stronger on.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that point. I just think, in general, like I say, the time was a big issue for me. I don't think half an hour is ever long enough.
Yeah, I agree there.
And especially when there's a lot of components, i.e. the host, the audience, the question askers, it all doesn't make... It's too short, half an hour, basically. I think that's the main issue I had, really.
But in a five-way debate, each candidate may only have 12 minutes.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but in terms of... as we sort of learned throughout this process, it's not about time anymore, is it? In sense, but, you know, the Brexit Party aren't given 12 minutes exactly. You know, there's no timers. It's not...
No, but my point is that you're criticising the one-on-one debate because the person X only has 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But they're definitely going to get much, much less than that.
Do you know what I think is also critical is that people are allowed to debate. I sometimes think that if you're allowed 30 seconds for an answer and 45 seconds for a reply, it doesn't give you that...
Yeah.
I think what it should be is maybe you're allowed 45 seconds as a thing and then just let them go. And a really good, and again, this happens a lot in America, a really good moderator will be able to have that as like a proper argument.
It's not a science, is it? That's the difference.
No, we're all going to agree and disagree on what type of style of debates we like or what type of formats we like. But at the end of the day, they do still serve a purpose. Will disagrees with us all and likes for one-on-one journalism.
Can I make a case for those debates?
Yeah, of course you can.
So here's what I'd say is...
You've got 10 seconds.
No, I'm going to have more than that because this is one of those restricted debates. So what I'm going to say is that the most recent example being these Andrew Neil interviews that are coming out. So the ones we saw this week were Nicola Sturgeon and Jeremy Corbyn most recently on Tuesday, which was, for most people in the media definitely and other people, was a bit of a car crash interview. And I thought what was good about that was that he can really press and press on certain issues and he doesn't have to move on, he doesn't have to give anyone else more time. So there were two issues. There was the anti-Semitism issue and he asked four times whether Corbyn would apologise, so that's really effective.
Yeah.
And then I think he asked six times whether how he would pay for the WASPI women payments.
Yeah.
And you then get a full image of what... And there's no hiding place. Johnson always uses the technique of making a bit of a gag and he gets a laugh off the audience and he can move on. You can't do that with no audience and you just have to keep going.
But they still have the right not to answer the question.
But, like, yeah, but it happens, it looks worse when they don't.
They do have the right, but I think what the format that Will is putting forward here, why I think that's also my favourite, is that it really... stresses the importance of a good journalist.
Yeah.
Somebody who holds that person to account every single thing they say, and there is nowhere to hide, there is nowhere to deflect. And I think Andrew Neil, you know, is a master of the art of doing that.
Yeah. And what he does so well is that he is equally hard on every single politician. Like, we saw how much of a car crash Jeremy Corbyn's one was this week. I dread to think what Boris Johnson's going to go through when
he
has his.
Well, he skewered him on the Article 24 of the... I mean, earlier this year, didn't he? He asked him three or four times if he knew what the article was.
Yeah.
And Johnson eventually had to say, no, I don't know what it is.
But if leaders were just honest and they just answer the questions, we wouldn't have this problem, probably, you know. But, oh, well, that's another
fantasy land.
That's another fantasy land that we live in.
But just bringing it back to debates, I think it really works having all of these formats together to build a picture. So even if debates may not be... Even if, from your guys' opinion, debates may not hold as high a regard as the one-to-one interview with Andrew Neil, I think allowing the electorate to see how the leaders react, how the leaders do in a debate format compared to a one-on-one with Andrew Neil, where, it, you know, for Corbyn's case, was an absolute car crash. I think that's important to see all sides and see the fact that, mate, well, you look, politicians aren't telling the truth and things like that, and I think that will affect how the vote goes.
That is a fair comment, you know, but like you say, we've all got different opinions on what format is best or what format is worst, but having a selection of all of them is always positive. I just want to move the conversation on ever so slightly more then. So obviously we've mentioned Andrew Neil, we've obviously had Adrian, and we've had Bethan Rees. In terms of them personally, just a little comparison of the three of them maybe, or a little like preparation and stuff like that, obviously we've heard from the inside. What do we all think about what they've got to do?
I don't envy them. They have such a difficult job. Imagine, you know, keeping all these facts, statistics in their heads, even if they have some notes with them, and having to moderate and, you know, keep it to time, having all the people talking in their ear, the producers, keeping an eye on the audience, you know, in Bethany Roberts' case. I really don't envy the job they do, and they all did really well at it.
It's tough, but it's a brilliant job.
Yeah.
Because you're doing exactly what a lot of people enjoy doing on the doorstep, which is have their local, whether it's council candidate or assembly member or MP, come to the doorstep and then being able to grill them. You're getting to do that with the leaders of each of the parties. I think it's a very tough job. I have the utmost respect for people who do this, but I also think mm-hmm. it's a job which you can, you know, as a journalist, you can only aspire to yeah. want to have a go at that at some point.
You're living on a knife edge though, aren't you? Because you have to retain that authority. For the viewer, the viewer has to trust that what you're saying is fact. And for someone like Andrew Neil, he's got to make sure each of his stats are correct. Because I think as soon as you get one wrong, people go, well, I can't believe anything. General. And as soon as the politician can poke a hole in that argument, then you're lost, I think.
But as well, on that point, I think it's important to stress that it's not just Andrew Neil who's sort of fact-gathering and is...
There's so many other people.
One of the things we've experienced this week, and we'll talk a little bit more about next week, is just how many people it takes to put a debate, whether it's an hour and a half, 2 hour debate, into practice. It's an incredible operation.
Yeah, and we'll be a part of that team as you listen to this, as we're running around helping the BBC with their 7-way debate in Cardiff. That's all we have time for this week. Make sure to join us next week, but we'll just throw a couple of social media details at you.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at HowToElection.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Anchor FM.
And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/HowToElection.
But for now, goodbye.
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 Hold out.